welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Apple. All the stuff that's not gone on, really, particularly because there's not much that's happened. But there we go. We'll talk rumours, we'll talk actuality, and we'll talk the obvious. Joining me, what a panel we got tonight. I tell you, boys, I've been so excited all week about this panel. It's really, really been cool. Starting us off, top left, Dr. Rock.
Aloha. It's the first time I get to be top left. I feel honored.
You're top left. And you're in lip sync because you're on the new Mac.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gangster. That's cool. So
that's
awesome.
Luck of the draw.
Man, and I get to be bearded right next to my favorite Bostonian.
Does anyone else live in Boston?
No, just him. He has the whole joint to himself. Have you seen his pictures on Flickr?
Yeah, no. Quite right.
Just him and a bunch of statues.
Fallout, that Fallout game, Fallout 4 is actually a documentary. Ever since the Mutant War came, it's...
And squirrels.
There's a few squirrels. Is that like squirrel?
Yes.
There we go. Are you using a CAM 3000 type thing as well, Andy?
I am still on Crane Cam 3000, the future of video podcasting, yes.
TM.
With superior XYZ translation and translocation, which means that as you're waiting for a show to start, you can basically waste time thinking, maybe that should be a little bit like higher up, or no, maybe it should be like a little bit like further down. Or no, maybe I should adjust it like this, and so.
No, dude, I got to say, this is a serious question because I've been listening about the 3000 future of podcasting thing for a while now, and I can't work out whether it's just a pile of books or not.
unfortunately, CraneCam 3000, the future of video podcasting, is being used to actually stream this show. So I can't use CraneCam 3000, the future of video podcasting, to actually show you what CraneCam 3000, the future of video podcasting, looks like.
If only there was a device where you could tweet out what it looked like.
Now we're making
having
demands,
taken a picture on said device.
Hey, this is inside baseball.
I feel like Lance Armstrong being asked about questions about doping. It's like I'm kind of like now not disinclined to give you details, but it's
I got to say, after you refused to get on your bike last week, I think you sod all like Lance Armstrong. he would have biked in a wind.
I don't want to die to get home to go on a podcast. I'm frankly not being paid as much as the rest of the people on this panel. Let's just put that out the open.
That's because the pound to dollar exchange, you know, it keeps fluctuating and you just can't swing it.
So Andy Armstrong in Atco said no,
but it's actually I might be modifying it in the near future. It is actually a one of these like spring arm sort of things that you've got your microphone on. Only I have like a camera mounted to like the end of it, and after finding out that it was originally just like gaffer, the camera's just like gaffer taped on the end of this broken architect lamp that I was saving because it's too nice of a thing to throw out. And then realized that, actually, I could probably actually build this properly. And now sometimes you have to shoot videos that's like a video of like the actual thing on the table. And sometimes you need to make an adjustment. And it's just, CraneCam 3000, the future of video podcasting, has been a boom to me in my professional and personal career.
Am I going to get
kind in general?
Am I going to get a DM from you on Twitter that says, sign the NDA or die?
No, I'll tell you the actual truth is that to get a picture of CraneCam 3000, the future of video podcasting, I don't know how I could do it without like blocking out the rest of the office, which is kind of in a horror show mode right now, because I've got like three major reviews coming in, two of things that are actually really, really big. And so I've got like big boxes and packing crates that are, I know that you have this, I've created this elaborate fantasy figure of myself that I'm really all together and everything is tidy and highly organized. I just don't want to ruin the image for kids out there to think that I actually have a messy office.
Mate, the danger is not when we believe that character, it's when you believe that character.
actually, it helps if you believe your own lie, because that way it actually turns into the truth.
So I've wondered now, because before you used to have a nice TV with a picture of a squirrel and a stuffed squirrel on the top, and now you've got a partition up that looks like you're in a youth hostel and it's for when you get changed.
Well, no, you can't do this in a youth hostel. Look, you got lighting effects.
Oh, dude, have you become a lap dancer? The time's that bad, man.
You know, we return to this observation that I'm really not being paid a lot for volunteering my time here on a Friday afternoon on a nice day. No, I'll see. The thing is, I did a video for like a big Q&A sort of thing, and the person in the Q&A made fun of the fact that essentially my backdrop was the back shelf in my office where I sort of dump stuff. And so I thought, okay, perhaps I don't want to have like the big wall of crap behind me as my official background. And basically, this was an attempt to not have to tidy behind me, look sort of clean, look, make everything look sort of clean. And plus, I mean, look, so you could even,
I think it's brilliant.
It even has this, where
I think it's brilliant too.
I was going to say
the Suji doors and the Hue lights are just epic, actually.
They are, the Hue lights are great.
Yes.
Yeah. And an Amazon Echo there in the background as well, is it?
That's not an, I do have an Echo, but I don't have, that's not the Echo.
Oh, right. I was going to go, but, hey, whatever it is, but. Andy and Atko, who comes on here once every 6 months, and after the first 10 minutes realizes why he only comes on here every 6 months. Sorry, man.
I'm just saying, the number of times I call out the discrepancy in our compensation packages and the number of times you don't address it, it's just a little bit embarrassing for you, friend. That's all I'm saying. we're almost going to be convinced that you don't have the funding that you keep claiming to have.
No, we haven't got any funding. Jesus Christ. Yeah.
There you go. See? Finally comes out.
Okay. Fair point. Next to him, Adam. How you doing, mate? Have you got your TGI braces there in the background on the right-hand side?
What are you looking at?
You've got like a set of TGI braces. Is that what the weekend job?
No, those are... That's my Disney
pin
collection.
Sorry, man. So you and Muller have been having a bit of a set-to over Star Wars. You and Muller, you've been having a bit of a set-to over Star Wars.
Set-to?
Oh, I don't know. They just broke ground on Star Wars Land at Disneyland yesterday.
You're kidding. What the hell are they going to put there?
I think there's going to be a Mos Eisley cantina, a replica of the Millennium Falcon. Cool stuff.
They're not going to scare the kids, are they, with the Mos Eisley canteen? Jesus Christ, the people that were in there. It's a freak so central. It's like Camden Town on a Saturday afternoon.
I can't remember all the stuff that's going to be in there, but it'll be a few years before it's done.
Yeah, true. Fair enough. Next to him, it's Lee from Guitar Show. You're back, mate. Out of focus, but you're back.
I'm on the Mac. It's probably the connection's been a bit funny because I'm having some... some network problems. So I'm on the Wi-Fi at the moment, but if it gets really bad, let me know and I'll...
I thought I was back in the 80s cable. There, and that was Max Headroom. What's up, Doc?
It's just great being back on Mac.
Good. Good to have you here, mate. Excellent. And there's a Guitar Show coming out, isn't there?
There is, yeah. I'm in the middle of trying to do it on the iPad Pro, which I'll go into a little bit later for my... Cool pick.
You thought, why do it on a nice, easy MacBook Pro? And just, I want a proof of concept here.
I don't want to get rid of my MacBook Pro, but I want to make the iPad. I'm not forcing myself to use the iPad. I genuinely do prefer the iPad experience for most stuff now. If I can just nail podcasting, I'll be sorted.
Excellent, mate. Good stuff. And last but my name is Lisa Mann, who is taking longer to come back than Andy and Atko.
He kept changing the dates of the show, so I couldn't find you. I was starting to take the hint.
I'm sorry, man. How the devil are you?
I'm great. You know, Andy's talking about cleaning up the back, you know, the wall of crap behind him, and I started looking around, and that's pretty much the whole look over here. So my kids call this the place where technology goes to die. So maybe I'll have to go buy some screens at IKEA after the show.
Adam and I have got a keyboard just like that as well. And it's sitting doing sod all too.
Yeah, mine's in a closet somewhere.
And Chuck needs an update.
Yeah, no, Chuck needs an update. But the problem is, because I've closed the VNC down to keep the CPU off the main Mac, it's shut down my bloody... That's not a logical fault. I can't work out that. It's been working like that just fine. Oh, the week in Apple, what's going on, what's been happening, and... what do you know? Well, the obvious one that's come out, which I thought, there was a bit of me started off with this, like, this is a non-story, this is just a non-event. But actually, and the more I've thought about it, I thought, oh, I wonder. I absolutely wonder. If you've got an iPhone, Apple have said they only expect your iPhone to last for 3 years and then you ought to replace it. And there was a bit of me was like, AKA a warranty or extended warranty. But then I thought to myself, hang on, are they saying that there's something coming up in September? If you've got a 4 or if you've got a 5, original 5, not a 5S, you might be saying goodbye to it on OS 10 or iOS 10. Discuss.
Where's this come from? I mean, I saw the headline, but I didn't actually get too much into the story. Is it actually someone official statement from Apple?
It's come through from a story in The Guardian, which I'll just dump in the chat room. There we go. Apple has said that it expects so-called first owners of £500 iPhones, iPads and Apple Watches to replace them after only 3 years of use. As part of the company's new environmental push, which includes its new Apps for Earth campaign with the World Wildlife Fund, Apple has listed how long it expects its products to last for their first owners.
Is this
an insignificant story? Is this a significant story is my question.
I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean in terms of the useful life of the product, in terms of its ability to run hardware and software, or are they talking about, they can't be talking about the hardware aspect of it, because, I mean, I have an original iPhone that still boots up and runs, and battery goes, you know, all day like it did. And so this must be more about, we figure the technological lifespan in terms of its ability to, you know, have good performance with apps and current OS like that. But even they, I mean, does that mean they're going to change? Because people can use them a lot longer.
Yeah, from my reading of it, I don't think it's a marketing thing or a product cycle thing at all. It looks to me just like it's an environmental report necessity that they have to sort of put a pin in the map and say how long they think these things are going to last. And it only says for first owner. So I think they're just trying to get an idea of how much of this stuff is going to get into the, well, not landfills, but, you know, into the need to be recycled and to be passed down. And I don't think there's anything more to it than that. They had to have a date that says how long this stuff is going to last before it needs to be recycled, and they picked 3 years.
Pick a card, any card.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably because that's what they're seeing from their users, you know. And it's first owners. So in my case, I have a phone. Maybe I'll have it 2 or 3 years, and then I'll pass it down to my wife or my kids, and they'll have it for another 3 years. And I think that's the kind of thing they're talking about.
You don't think
it's just for people who want to. Sorry, and I was just going to say it's just for people, I think, that want to be on the more the cutting edge of iOS, probably, because yeah, like you guys have said, I've got family members still using iPhone 4s, and they're getting on fine. You know, they can still message and make phone calls and run most apps.
So the last update for 9, I mean, that was kind of good on obsolescence, wasn't it? It didn't obsolete the handsets we thought it would. Because you could have seen 4 dropping off, couldn't you?
I think it goes to 4S, doesn't it? The iOS 9. I know. On a four, you can't have it because I've got family members with it and they can't upgrade. So, I'm guessing it's a 4S or a 5.
Yeah. No. Andy, any thoughts? Is there anything to this, or is it just?
Well, it's just a number. I agree. I think that in context, given that Apple was did their whole App Store push, but here's all these environmental apps, and here's how we're helping the World Wildlife Fund, and that kind of PR. It seems more like here if we're going to make plans on how quickly we need to we as a company need to handle incoming devices for recycling, we figure that every 3 years people are replacing their phones, and that's the metric that we're using, which seems like it's kind of on the money. I think that after 3 years, it's not as though any of these phones stop working. I still have some phones that I still have an iPhone 4 or an iPhone 5 that that I sometimes fire up for just compatibility testing, and it works just fine. Apple makes things phones particularly to last, but after 3 years, that's when you start to have a lot of hardware features that aren't going that everybody will want, but they're not available on old phones. Things like Touch ID, things like not just actual camera sensor features, but things like the speed at which the camera can take pictures, the sort of things you can do in post-processing. So much of the iPhone's features are based on simply having a wicked, wicked fast processor. Yeah. It really isn't about calculating fractals faster than the last model. It really is. Every single feature is tuned towards here's how we can overprocess something. Here's how we can overthink something in the background by virtue of the fact that we have this smoking hot processor in the background. So I think most people, if you don't replace your phone after 3 years, then you're simply not someone who has that sort of active relationship with a phone. You're just getting it for phone calls and texts and occasional Facebook posts.
Yeah, and there's nothing in here that indicates that Apple is going to start sneaking in little switches there that make the phone suddenly die after 3 years or you know, make the performance worse. I looked at the document that the story is based on, and it's one number under a section on the Apple's environmental report that says, how does Apple conduct its product greenhouse gas lifecycle assessment? So they have to put a term on here in order to figure out what that assessment is. And it really says years of daily usage patterns are specific to each product, mixture of actual data and the length of a customer who's going to use the device. That's based on assumptions. And we said 4 years for OS X and tvOS devices, 3 years for iOS and watchOS devices. From that little bit is what they built that whole story on. So I think it's really a non-issue.
So this is me like getting an Apple invitation and trying to read way too much in it.
what do you guys think?
I think it's about the Guardian trying to generate clicks.
Oh, okay, good point.
Yeah. One thing I was just going to mention is, what do you think about the OS X to Mac OS rumor? There's still that same story. I mean, it makes sense to me, but...
OS 10 to Mac OS rumor?
So changing over to Mac OS.
I think it would be great in so many ways, because number one, it will stop us from picking on people like you who like to say X.
So sorry.
we'll just take that out. And in a way, I think that'll be great. But I think it would be also easier not to have to try to keep up with weird naming nomenclatures and whatnot, which doesn't really affect us. We always got a kick out of it. But, you know, now that there's so many, I think of all Apple changes with, now that there's so many neophytes or just, you know, standard issue run-of-the-mill muggles getting into the game, that it's beneficial to them, and therefore it makes our job easier. Because how many times have you said to someone, hey, what OS are you running? And they're like, oh, Safari or Chrome. I'm like, what? You know, that's the browser, dude. Like, no, which operating system? Oh, it's a Mac. I'm like, God dang it. You know, so I think in a way it'll be great to just have some of that go away.
How many people actually know?
I'll miss it.
How many people actually know? So I got a thing the other day, which was a support request. I sent it off and they said, what version of OS X are you running? And there's kind of me, I'm like, I think I know. But I had to go into system profile to find out what exact version I was running. It's like, there's an update. Okay. There's an update.
Yeah.
Okay. There's an update. Okay. And I have no clue. And you said to me now, I looked it up, and it was one of those things, you know, like, I looked it up so I didn't have to remember it. So I can't tell you what version I'm running. Right this second.
And that's us. You imagine that's us. This is 10.11.4, but like, if someone asked me that on any given day other than today, I probably might not even remember it. I might be right there with you. Am I on 4 or am I on 3? You know, and it might make a difference on certain apps as far as support goes, especially with the, you know, the changing of sandboxing and, you know, things that have direct ties to the hardware, what's been kicked out of the app store, let back in the app store. So I think even for us, it'd be starting to become a problem, as you just mentioned. So, yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah. Also, Apple's starting to get into a thing where they're trying to remove model numbers from all of their products. Where they remember that they got rid of that with the iPad a while ago. It's no longer the iPad 2, the iPad 3, the iPad 4. It's just simply the new iPad. And we stopped talking about models of MacBooks. We don't talk about the year it was released. I think that this is probably just par for the course. Where if they figure that if they stop calling it Mac OS 10.1, it's just simply Mac OS. It stops people from thinking about what version number that they have and starts them thinking about what features it has and what the security updates they're running. And it also means that it might unlock their dependence, Apple's dependence upon making people aware that, oh, geez, you know, Mac OS X has been around for 2 years now. Why are we still running Mac OS X? Mac OS X, we shouldn't be on Mac OS 11 now.
Wow,
if you just simply say we're on Mac OS and, by the way, you have the latest version.
Yeah, and Apple's not selling versions of the OS anymore, right? So we're not saying you have to run out and buy Mac OS 9.6 because that all has all these features. You know, you don't need to upgrade to this version because it's going to give you this. It's just these incremental upgrades. You're always, it's free and you're always up to date and you're always encouraged to just stick to the latest operating system. So I don't think there's a reason to make the distinction anymore.
I mean, that's
probably figured.
Go on. Sorry, Adam.
I was going to say they probably figured after 14 years it was time to not be Mac OS 10 anymore, or OS 10.
Yeah, OS 10, 10.77.
And also remember that when OS 10 was first released, they were making a big deal that it was an entire platform. A lot of people still forget that that iOS is actually running OS 10. It's just not Mac OS 10. It's iOS, and so there's no marketing advantage, there's no tactical advantage to calling it OS 10. If they had a range of products and they were leveraging that as, here is the secret sauce that makes all of our Apple hardware wonderful, it all runs OS 10, then there'd be reason to hold on to it. As it is, no.
Hmm. Yep. Okay. That was a better discussion than I thought it was going to be based on the story. Apple has said that there is a vulnerability in QuickTime for Windows, but they're doing sod all about it. There was a few websites are up in arms over this, but I've got to say, I don't see why there's a problem. You know, Apple's advice is if you've got QuickTime on your Windows PC, delete it.
That's right. We don't want you. Go away.
Yeah, go on. Take your shit computer.
We don't need you anymore.
No. I mean, I don't think there's a problem with that, is there? Why would Apple want to keep QuickTime?
Why do you need it there anymore? I mean, you really don't. And back in the day, it was because you wanted to get web videos, and a lot of them were posted in QuickTime. But now everything is H.264, HTML5. So it's, you know, I don't see a reason for it to be there.
I mean, VLC as well is pretty concurrent across all platforms, isn't it now? So, I mean, that's kind of like the default player of choice. So whether you've got MP4M, 4V, MOV, WMV, nearly all the time when you click, you know, you double click a file, it probably opens up in VLC for most private users, certainly.
Does that rely on anyway?
Sorry, say the question again, Chuck.
I said, you know, when's the last time you double clicked a file to play it anyway? Most of the time we're playing files through our web browser or through iTunes if we're watching movies and all that stuff. You know, it's not like we have a whole lot of loose movie files laying around anymore.
Well, this dinosaur does it constantly. Sorry, mate.
well, look what you do for a living.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. What was your point? Now I've discarded Chuck's.
I was going to ask, on the Windows side, does VLC still need to rely on to play those older QuickTime formats, though? Does it need to rely on QuickTime being installed within the OS, or is it have its own sort of way for handling that?
Question.
That I don't know.
My instant response
would
be
VLC
no.
VLC is standalone.
I think it's standalone, but that's an interesting question, though, because if you just asked me that now, I'd have gone, no, it doesn't. And then as soon as you'd asked the question, it was like, and I thought about the answer, I was thinking, oh, that's a good point. Because it does, VLC did rely on an awful lot of codecs from other sources, didn't it?
Yeah, I think its primary function is FFmpeg. FFmpeg is kind of the universal go-to codec since Parian died, you know, a few years past. And I believe the open source nature of VLC leaves it that FFmpeg is this master, you know, decoder, and everything else kind of flows from that.
Question from Deepan in the chat room, and he's saying, or a statement from him, and he's saying, I think QuickTime is a prerequisite for installing iTunes on Windows, though.
It used to be. I don't know if it's still that way anymore, but since I nuke and pave my machine, I can give you an answer pretty soon.
I've got to say, we don't have a lot of Windows listeners to this, so go on then, Muller.
I've installed it on one I got at home, and I just installed iTunes on it.
Just installed iTunes, there's no QuickTime requirement with it, no. Okay, so maybe not, but good question. And then you uninstall it when you realize how crap iTunes is on Windows.
Just because the standalone installer is going away doesn't mean they aren't still embedding some of that technology within an app package. So in the case of iTunes, there may still be some of that technology rolled into it. I don't really know how it's built out. I'd have to go digging, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's sort of baked in anyway.
It uses Silverlight,
says Muller. Which I don't think so. only porn sites use Silverlight, Muller. So that answers your usage of them, I think.
Mark, I believe you're absolutely correct. But like Adam just said, I think now that there's a, what the Windows people call slipstream ways of installing it in the same time you install iTunes without having to have a standalone.
Good point. Apple is releasing a car, and there's been a visualization of what that car may look like.
God. You're bringing up the Motor Trend thing?
By Motor Trend, and I've got to say, if you fancy driving a fridge, then this is the fridge of choice. No question.
I think that they lose credibility the moment. All you have to do is see four hubcaps with spinning Apple logos in the hubs. That's like, okay, I don't need to see the rest of the video where you pull back and we see the rest of the car.
Do the Apple logos spin independently of the wheeler when you stop?
No, they flash. I don't
Apple
know.
Drug dealer. Ugh. I mean, so we briefly touched on this last week. Is there any credibility to an Apple car?
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Absolutely. Only because the thing that we know for sure is that a bunch of people who have had really brilliant and successful and valuable careers in the auto industry have quit those careers to take up jobs at Apple. So that is definitely an indication they're working on it. It's definitely an indication that whatever pitch they've given to these people who are, again, they're not up-and-coming engineers. They've had really great careers. They could basically work at any job that they want. Whatever pitch Apple gave those people convinced those people to take a flutter on a top secret project. So that at least means that Apple's serious about it. What form that's going to take, that's another thing entirely. We could be talking about an actual production car. We could be talking about simply a hardware and software reference platforms they could license out to other people. It could be just the most ambitious test bed they could ever think of in a way to sort of direct the rest of the industry to please take up this flag and wave it. But it's certainly, and it could be it could be something that they just never talk about ever again, just like a few other projects. I could mention Apple TV, but it's certainly not a fake project.
So, I mean, here's the thing, right? In my mind, I remember years ago going on a quality course, and the guy that was doing the course told a story about the guy that wrote the quality system for Porsche cars. And they said that he said, right, okay, so tell me the components that you've got and how they work and how you ensure the quality of those so that there's zero failures. And they said, well, there's going to be failures because, you know, it's we're building a big car. It's a quality car. It's great. It's fantastic. It's high quality. But, you know, we can't guarantee every single component all of the time. And he said, okay, that's fine. I can't write a quality system for you until you tell me which components are going to fail and how. Otherwise, you know, that's not the point of a quality system. It's to ensure that all of the systems are produced and all of the componentry is produced for a specific function and cannot fail. And if you find failures, you then recover from it. And they said, well, we've got 20,000 components in the average Porsche. And he said, right, tell me exactly which ones fail and I'll write a system for you. And that was the bit that stuck with me, was like 20,000 components in a Porsche. So you take a car, Apple are going to manufacture 20,000 components that they don't currently manufacture.
They don't manufacture screens or CPUs either. They know people that they can pay money to who will manufacture it for them.
And I understand that because one of my customers is a supplier to the motor trade, and they provide the windows for 40% of the world's cars, and you've never heard of the company that I work for. But there's no assembly plant. There's no... And to create an assembly plant, you're talking, I mean, you go back to the, do you remember the Ford Pinto and that email or the letter from the Ford Pinto? Do you remember that?
No.
So the GM General Manager of Ford or the CEO of Ford writes an email that says, we've got a few people who are dying through rear-end collisions in the Ford Pinto. We've costed it out and it's $150 million to retool it to change the fuel tanks, and we reckon we're only going to pay out to $18 to $20 million for civil claims for deaths. So we won't be changing the tooling anytime soon. I'm making the figures up, by the way. There,
yeah.
But there's a certain amount of, you know, as much as that makes you the Antichrist, there is a solid business practice in what you just said there. And you know, if you're talking about that's how much it costs to tool to make a new amendment to a fuel tank, I know Apple's not short of money, but the amount of money that, the amount of time that $150 million of investment or $300 million or $1 billion of investment costs to actually create infrastructure to produce the car is that's not coverable upable unless they're doing it in a big spherical thing outside San Francisco.
Well, and outside of that, Ewan, though, you got to think about the convergence of the technologies and the cross application of a lot of the stuff that they're spending R&D money to look at the viability of maybe building a car, like Andy alluded to. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get there. And a lot of the underlying technology that they're investigating, battery technology, computer technology, artificial intelligence technology, vision technology, all of these things have applications in a lot of their other products as well. So there's a lot of cross-discipline going on. So investing the money, even if they never do anything with the car side of things, if they don't take that extra step to get into manufacturing, which I think they still could, you know, there's not a lot of risk there. I mean, more and more cars are just becoming computers with wheels attached.
But the
right?
cost of bringing those components together is what I'm talking about. It's not the cost of those components. It's the cost of assembly that's the issue. You have to have somewhere to assemble. And Foxconn ain't doing it.
But again, that's making the assumption that Apple's end game here is to actually produce a production consumer car, and that might not be it at all. They can certainly afford to design and engineer a complete car, and then look at what they have and decide if they want to actually make that big leap of financing a car plant of their own, or finding a car company that they want to buy out. And essentially convert them into Apple Motors. But remember that there are so many things that Apple puts a hell of a lot of money in, which just with the idea that we don't know if we want to do a self-contained TV yet, but let's pretend that we are going to do this in 3 years, so that if 3 years that seems like a good idea and we wind up someplace we like, we will actually be able to ship this product. And they're perfectly okay with then spending all that money and then deciding that, nope, this isn't for us. We can't really do this. So, and the heartbreaking thing is that it would be tough because you have all these people who are probably doing really exceptional, exciting work on a car. And if in 3 years' time, Apple decides that this isn't for them, that product never existed. It'll be like the Soviet moon lander, where they're definitely building it. They definitely built it. They were definitely training astronauts for it. They definitely chosen the cosmonaut who's going to be the first man, Soviet, to step on the moon. But when they decided that they don't want to go forward with this, it became a non-project that it took the collapse of communism to actually get this story told. And that's that's the fate that a lot of Apple engineers are facing every single day when they show up to work.
Yeah, I mean,
look at all the resources they had for the Intel version of OS X, you know, in secret building that operating system in parallel with the one that was working on the PowerPC chips. If Apple hadn't needed to make that switch, you never would have known that they existed in the first place.
I just think there's so much infrastructure going on afterwards, though, as well. You've got dealerships, you've got servicing, you've got, you know, there's so many add-ons that Musk is having immense problems with at the moment.
Yeah, but he's succeeding. He's doing it. And look more clout Apple would have if they wanted to apply themselves to that. Their end game is a complete car either.
And how long is it since the Roadster was announced? I mean, I said last week, I think there's a car. I'm sure there's a car. But it's how to interact with the car. It's a test model. It's a bench for how to get your Apple device to interact with your auto. It's not a car that they're going to sell.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah. You know, it's funny that you mentioned about the distribution and all of that. Here, the Tesla store and the Apple store and the Microsoft store are the triangle, and you can stand in the middle and touch all the stores. I mean, they're right next to each other. And so it's kind of funny now to see, you know, Tesla's lined up in the middle of the mall. And Alamoana is no slump of a mall. It's one of the world's busiest malls. But they're slinging Teslas left and right in Hawaii. It's insane. Like, I'm pretty mind blown by how many, like 2 years ago, you would be lucky to see one every couple of days. And now you can't drive without seeing one. So although many people are saying Elon is dealing with troubles, most of those troubles is from the standard automakers trying to create trouble. Not that they can't produce. Like, so they're okay with their production, but they're just getting in heat from lobbyists and like ne'er-do-wells trying to basically cock block their swag. So I don't know. Like, I think
I was going to say hold on to their antiquated business model, but I like the way you put it better.
Huh?
I was going to say they're trying to hold on to their antiquated business model, but I like your description a lot better.
Oh, Sorry. I'm with a bunch of young guys in this show, so just, you know, my hip hop vernacular slips out from time to time. But no, it's pretty impressive. And I agree with you, what you and saying to some extent. I mean, Ford is worth like $119 billion, so Apple would have to be willing to give up about 80% of everything in order to build exactly what Ford has. But I don't think they need to build exactly what Ford has. And I can tell you right now, it wouldn't behoove any of us to think that all of the companies that are, you know, there and have standards, how much they wasted getting that far, that the prior knowledge, the so many years of prior knowledge, Apple can skip all kinds of basic steps because Elon did it. I mean, that's a proven concept. He skipped all of the rubbish parts of it and went straight to the good parts of it. And that's part of what's pissing the other guys off, is because he just showed up and he's like, you know, killing stuff. He's the modern day Steph Curry of automobiles.
Andy, go ahead.
I was just going to say that Apple can also define their own definition of success. Tesla is one of the most talked about cars out there. It becomes national news in America whenever they have a new release. But realize that they've sold tens of thousands of them, whereas Toyota has sold tens of millions of Toyota Corollas. Yeah. Apple can decide that they will have a success if they only sell 20,000. Again, assuming they want to build an actual consumer roadworthy car, if they can decide that all we need to do is build 20,000 of these, and they'll be a pretty good success. Also, they're a company that really likes high markups. So if they decide that they want to charge $85,000 for a car that costs them $35,000 to make, they don't have to sell as many of them as iPhones in order to make it a success. Again, it's wide open because they can simply say that we don't need to take over the car market the way that we took over the phone market. We can be more like a Macintosh, where we have a single digit percentage of desktops worldwide, but we have carved out a unique identity. The people who buy Macs really want to buy them, and they'll definitely buy one when this one is no longer useful to them. And we've set up our business in such a way that each Mac makes us a whole lot of money. So they could probably make a car like a Macintosh as opposed to a Toyota Corolla.
I know it's not an apples to apples comparison, but I remember sitting there when Steve announced the iPhone and said, We are looking for 1% of the global smartphone market, right? I mean, yes. They brought to that was the success to them at that point. So by the same token, but what Andy's talking about, yeah, they can certainly, you know, carve out a very small percentage of that market and still be considered successful.
I want to give a shout out at this point, while we're talking about electric cars, to Paul. If you weren't aware last week, we had a bit of a failure on the Mac show and we couldn't publish it. So we put the big show onto the Mac Show feed, so you can all have a listen. And you should listen to the Big Show, because it's a great show. It really is a good show. But Paul was listening, and he said, "Hi, Ewan, long-time fan of the show. I heard you talking about a Tesla on this week's show, and I've got a Model S. I wondered if you'd like me to pop over to the studio so you can have a go with mine."
Nice.
Yeah. Wow. My reply to him was, "I love you."
I'm not very hip to like European vernacular. Is he implying that you'd like to have sex with his car?
Well, no. he didn't ask me if I was musical, if that's what you're asking. But and you can play. He did say you can play with mine, and then .. my car. So, but he says he doesn't want to be on camera, and he doesn't want me to show the number plate. So,
What is your guys' version of the FBI?
it's a honeypot thing.
Also, could you hold this stuff for me? A guy will come by later to pick it up.
But the thing is, I'm totally in with that. That's fine. I can do that for riding the Tesla. Although I do get a free Tesla riding the Tesla. So yeah, I've got one coming up.
So just one more point about Tesla and electric cars, and just to show the appetite that's out there for them. Tesla took about 276,000 pre-orders last I saw. So not everybody obviously is going to actually get delivery of that car, and it'll take a little while for them all to be built. But 276,000 pre-orders, and what's the other car? Leaf. The Nissan Leaf has only sold 200,000 cars since 2011, so 5 years.
But there was a point last week on the show which, the Nissan Leaf is great, but does it really give you wood? No. And whereas the Tesla S, I've looked at that and gone, damn, that's a sexy car. And I didn't care whether it was petrol-driven or not. It was a good-looking car. And then when they said, oh, it's a petrol-driven car, and you could do up to 330 miles in it, average probably about 260, and you're like, I could afford that. And I don't do anywhere near the mileage. I mean, my mileage has gone down from 25,000 a year down to about 15,000 a year now. So it's,
yeah.
I don't, but even I'm sitting going, I could do that. And the wife's crapping herself that I have a test drive in it.
I just kind of wish that Apple were focused on a bigger idea than this. It's an electric car. Again, every time we talk about this, we have to preface it with assuming that they're going to do what we think they're going to do. It's like, okay, it's a car. It uses the highway system, the same one we've always had, the ones that are already overblown and take up too much of our time and too much of our real estate. I would like them to do something that's really, really different and really, really exciting. Like imagine them making, there's a company in Cambridge, our Cambridge, that makes this thing, I think they call it the Copenhagen wheel for bicycles. It is just a rear wheel you can put onto any bicycle. And it looks like a normal bicycle wheel, except for it has this like big, like M&M, red M&M candy sort of thing that covers the hub and extends like two thirds of the way out to the spokes. And that hub contains like a hub motor and batteries and a computer. And all it does is it feels the amount of stress you're putting on the hub when you're pedaling. And if you're it feels as though you, if it seems as though you're working very hard, the motor will sort of just give you a little bit of a push. So going uphill will be about as stressful as going flat. And it can also completely power the bicycle if you want. But that's, imagine Apple doing something like that, that makes it, makes people not think about buying an electric car, but by owning one car fewer than they thought that they would actually need. Like imagine the, having something like a, an electric motorcycle, only not quite so motorcycle-y, more consumer-y, more, this is something that will be, that will absolutely serve your needs for any trip you're doing that's less, that's fewer than 15 miles. It's going to cost less than $2,000. However much money that you typically spend on a, to have to be a two-family car, this will be much, much better in all respects. And then also using part of that popularity and part of that clout to sort of encourage communities to make it easier for people to walk and ride bikes and ride low low MPH vehicles from one place to another. That's a big idea. But the idea of sell, having being another manufacturer of mid-price to high-price cars, again, it's like the Apple Watch. It's nice. It's a cool object, but it's not really game-changing.
Yeah. You know, I picked that Copenhagen wheel as a pick on the big show about this time last year, and that thing is so amazing. I can't wait for them to actually hit production and come out. The only bummer is it doesn't work if you have disc brakes on your bike, so I got to buy a whole new bike for it.
Yeah, but that's exactly it. I mean, I've been like the king of car recycling because my commutes are typically from the bedroom in the house to the office in the house, or from the house to commuter rail to go to an airport and go 3,000 miles away. So I've never owned a new car. I typically like buy a car with 50 or 60 or even 80,000 miles on it, and then it'll take me several years to get it up to 150, 175,000 miles on it. I'm the loving last owner. I'll put the last 80,000 miles on a car. Mm-hmm. And now finally my last car is Geschwinkto. And I thought that I had, as usual, I'd take about a month to, okay, we'll see what's out there. We'll see if there's what kind of opportunities there are. Probably need to get a new one sometime in the next month, month and a half. And I have realized that I actually don't really need even one car. I mean, I'll buy another car eventually, but the thing is, every place I go is usually 5 miles away, typically, and I should be walking places that that are that close away. I have a bicycle now that's even better. I can get places in only a little bit longer than it would have taken me to get there by car. I have learned more about the bus lines and the commuter rail lines in my community. There is a Zipcar over here, so the times I actually did need a car, I can simply ride a bike 15 minutes to a lot, lock up the bike, jump into this car that I reserved on a half hour's notice, drive it for an entire day, park it, and then come back home. So that's the sort of thing I'm thinking about. I think that it's time for a forward-thinking company to think about solving the problem of transportation, where we no longer need to have four-lane highways. We can have two-lane highways and a one-lane bikeway, and figure out how to make people realize that they're overusing their cars.
Yeah, I think if you look in London, there's an awful lot of people that are in that sort of 7 mile radius of central London that have realised they don't need cars because there's such a good passenger transport system in the underground and in the bus network. And I don't need, we're a two car family. We don't need two cars. But the problem is, I've got to say, well, I'll give up my car quite happily because I travel the train an awful lot. But there are days when I need the car because I have to drive to Bath to do a photo shoot with 40 kilos of camera gear in the back. Then I've got to prize the car off the wife. And I'm not doing that. You know, I'm not that big a man.
It's going the opposite direction of where we were, what we were just talking about. But I threw in the chat room, what do you guys think about iPhone hacker Geohot and building an aftermarket self-driving car system? Do you know about the story?
Yes.
So the guy who originally hacked the iPhone, you know, he goes by Geohot. He has a new company called Comma AI, and he's hacked.
Oh, piss off! Auto start video. You he's bastard!
That was probably Bloomberg. He's hacked his Acura to include a self-driving car system, and he started up a company. They just got a bunch of rounds of financing, I think, this past week or so. And they're building an aftermarket, you know, you plug into the port on your car, the system that will make your car self-driving. That's what they're trying to do, at least.
Yeah, and he still lives in his basement with his mum, according to the picture that's on that story. I swear, there are Cheeto stains
on his jeans. You know, and could Apple apply technology in that way too? You know, where they don't have to build a car, they build a system that taps into your existing car, and now it's got all kinds of new features and functionality, self-driving, etc.
There's no way. Surely, there's no way that's going to be manufactured with the amount of car companies. You know, I can't see someone, I don't know, like a Ford or somebody allowing you to put this on your car. There's probably warranty issues, but also, you know, you could seriously knack your car unless there's a disclaimer that says if anything goes funny with the car, then don't come crying back to us. But I'm skeptical whether that could actually be legal, you know.
Well, you've got the self-driving feature on Tesla cars at the moment, and if anyone finds you using that, mate, you're for the high jump because that is illegal.
But that's Tesla produced, isn't it? I mean, this is something that I could go outside and stick on my car now.
But it's illegal, is my point. It's an illegal system.
And you can't stick it on your car now. I mean, it's in development. Obviously, there's a lot of regulation and testing and all the stuff that has to, you know, get passed. But, I mean, this is the kind of thing where you're in the game now building these technologies so that when that stuff gets sorted, you're the first to market with the system, right? I mean, and Apple's a little bit in that game as well. So, you know, we're assuming it's all about maybe an electric car, but there's probably a lot of other directions they could ultimately move based on a lot of the technology that they're working on right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a great idea.
Who are looking at this or looking at seeding him or funding him or whatever, a lot of it will be like, you know, at first, this guy, George Holtz, is already proven his merit as a tinkerer / hacker or whatever. So let's just get him in our pocket now, and we can take what he's done with this Acura and the iPad, and let's put it to something a little bit more financially stable for those investors, right? Now, he's doing a car thing, but you know, these are the kind of guys that end up working at Boston Robotics or, you know, whatever. And he's a super young guy yet. I mean, he was 17 when he did the iPhone thing, if I remember. So I'm assuming, you know, even with the neck beard, he's not much older than 22 or 23 at this point. So he's a perfect, I hate to say this, but purchase for some company with the money to give him, here's a lab, bro. Here's your budget. We'll see you next 2 years. You can come upstairs and we'll send you lunch. We'll give you, you know, direct line to Domino's. Stay down there. You're used to it already. And like, these are the guys that create really, really cool stuff in the skunk works of many, many companies. So I think that it's nice to see that he was able to do this. I agree it would be completely illegal, but if somebody came up with an aftermarket self-driving kit, oh my God, that would just be ridiculous. I'd be scared of the people that install it, though, if you remember the way people used to install car stereos. Wires hanging.
Well, that's and again, you got to remember, I mean, they could ultimately sell the system, you know, get bought out, and some car company who's behind on self-driving technologies might just buy them out. I mean, there's lots of plays that could go into this. And he is 26, you know, at this point. And by the same token, when Musk came out and said, hey, we're going to build electric cars, everybody said he was nuts. You know, anything great that's been done, the person behind it probably was told they were insane at one point.
I think what Musk has done that's different from everyone else that's done electric cars is he's created desire. That's the separation. And I think Apple's got to be careful, because unless it can create desire, it's pointless even stepping into this market. And based on that mock-up, mate, there's no desire.
Well, that was thing just,
serves me up a cold that, beer, then I'm happy. But other than that,
that's complete fiction on, I don't know, you know, which car designers, Motor Trend got to do that, but that was the most horrible design I've ever seen.
Johnny Ive is sitting there going, you know I'm Johnny Ive, right?
Yeah.
They're laughing their butts off, I'm sure.
Yeah. iPhone 7, allegedly, we're into rumors already, Jesus. iPhone 7 apparently is supposed to, I've just deleted the link. Oh, man. iPhone 7 is supposed to be coming with two-facing camera and all that kind of shiz, but no speakers, they're saying.
Shut up.
No speakers, they say.
Shut up.
So
that's not happening.
Yeah. Ring.
How is Siri going to talk back to you?
Well, exactly. That's my point.
How are you going to hear the phone?
it's a stupid rumor.
It's a stupid rumor. No question.
Yeah, we're done. That's all we need to say.
Moving on. ultra-thin MacBooks come in.
God, wouldn't it be great to have a really thin MacBook? Wow, just imagine. Oh, wait, no, we have those.
Maysport metal injection mold-made hinges.
Okay.
Stop it. I'm going to change my underwear. That's so sexy. Injection molded metal? Wow. That's what every consumer is saying. I wish it was injected. It's just not useful to me because it doesn't have injection metal.
Well, those hinges sound like they're made of wood.
That's probably, I mean, the only exciting thing about that is it's probably them finally actually using maybe the liquid metal the liquid metal technology they have.
Yeah, because when I bought my £1,000 iPad Pro, they gave me a frigging paperclip.
Right.
I haven't forgotten that. I'm never going to forget that, Tim. I know you watch.
Is there a rumor about how many USB ports it's going to have?
Well, they're talking about Thunderbolt 3.
Well, I won't have USB.
And USB-C as well as. So
what? You don't need both because Thunderbolt 3 is over USB 3 port.
Yeah.
They're talking about both, though.
That's ridiculous.
There, that's the original.
So you're talking about a company that we can seriously discuss whether or not they're not going to have a headphone jack just to remove another port. This is not a company that would have two redundant ports on a phone.
Right.
And you don't think there's going to be a Thunderbolt and a USB-C?
No,
we're talking on the new MacBooks, right?
On the MacBook Pro, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. The MacBook. Why would they have? Okay, Thunderbolt and it depends. It's. I'm sorry. I thought we were still talking about the iPhone. I don't know. It's the thing is I've learned not to guess what Apple's going to do on a MacBook. They, as I will never tire of saying, they have a MacBook Pro, a Pro MacBook. You walk in carrying a big bag of money with $500,000 in Krugerrands or doubloons or whatever, and say, I'll sell me the absolute best Macintosh, portable Macintosh you have. Sure, money is absolutely no object, and you still get something where you can't upgrade the RAM and there's no Ethernet port and a whole bunch of other things that you would expect on a $1,500 Windows notebook. So I think that if you're in dongle hell to begin with, they may as well say, well, just we'll keep you in dongle hell. The one thing that Thunderbolt though does have going for it is that it's also used as a video port for a lot of people, and I'm not sure if a lot of people would like to swap out a video port over USB 3 for what they've got right now that works just fine.
You'll have an adapter. I mean, USB-C, as far what I understand is USB-C and Thunderbolt 3 are completely compatible, so you can have a USB-C connector and still do Thunderbolt over that same connector. So why not just standardize on one connection all the way around?
Because now you're talking about I can't just plug it right in. I have to make sure that I bring a dongle with me. Yeah, and then you're also saying now I've got to make sure that I bring a hub with me because I'm quickly going to run out of ports for all the stuff I need to do. And I right now I'm looking at my MacBook Pro, which is in desktop mode, and it has counting power, it has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things plugged into it. And 6 if you include the SD card that's plugged into the SD slot. And if given that at any given trip I might have any one of those things or any two of those things, I would be really, really miffed if I paid $2,000 for something that is not going to work for me unless I always travel with a hub and always travel with a box of adapters. It's just a real bummer for me.
I would assume on a Pro we're talking, you know, 4 or 5 USB-C ports. I get the dongle thing. I get what you're saying about the dongle thing, and that's a little inconvenient. But I don't put it past Apple to say, look, it's got 4 USB-C ports, and they do Thunderbolt, and here's your dongle.
So just to be clear, the story that I'm reading from MacRumors says the ultra-thin MacBooks are launching in the second half of 2016 with Thunderbolt 3 and USB-C. And I just think that Apple has walked away from USB-C a little bit soon, walked away from Thunderbolt, rather, a little bit soon. I think even at the MacBook level, people still like the idea of plugging in a Thunderbolt device of some description.
Well, I think one thing that you have to look at, though, too, is right now, if you wanted to buy an extra display, and I mean, if you wanted to buy, meaning Apple wanted you to spend $1,000 on theirs, you have to use the connector that is on that. And that is not obsolete yet. So without announcing new monitors, it is in their best interest if they would leave that port there for a little bit longer to take care of monitors. But then, like the boys were talking about earlier on like a higher end device. And by the way, Andy, mine is exactly like yours. 5 things sticking out, 6 if you include the SD. Mine right now is connected to the Drobo Mini, which is then in turn connected to the monitor. And I don't know right now if I would want, I guess on a Pro level, you know, dealing with certain cameras and certain video gear, whatever is that, I don't want to put dongles in the middle of that. It just seems kludgy. So I would want that to kind of stay there, and I think there's enough of reason for them at this point in time to put it back, mostly for monitors or for the type of users that have a piece of kit that plugs directly
I think the focus groups are saying there's a bit of a backlash on the single port thing. I think people don't want a single port. I think they've kind of gone out there, they've done it, and people have gone, sorry, mate, you're way off base here.
And just so I'm not confusing people, I'm not talking about single port, I'm talking about single connector, type of connector.
Multiple ports, but they're all USB-C, you're saying?
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
I mean, I think they're definitely, the next MacBook Nothing, I think, will definitely have at least 2 USB-C ports. But I do think that we're like 2 or 3 years ahead of ourselves to think that people don't want a standard USB 3 connector on the side of the thing. It's still a bit earlier for that. It's especially interesting to talk about what happens with the MacBook Pro, because Apple does seem to want to redefine what a pro level machine is. Like it'll run pro apps very, very well, but what about convenience factors? So it's hard for me to guess.
I'm in danger of getting emails here about how much of an Apple hater I am, which I'm not. But I think there's an awful lot of stuff that Apple's doing at the moment where they're throwing stuff out there, and actually they're really risking a consumer backlash. And there was a point made by Nathan Smith actually in our Slack room, and he was on the money. He said this whole thing with the USB-C charger now charging the iPad Pro properly, in inverted commas, mm-hmm. of all the class actions that have ever been brought up against Apple in the last 10 years, that's the only one that's really got some credence. It's got some justifiability to it, because there is no way on God's green earth that the Apple charger that was shipped with the iPad Pro is suitable and sufficient for that device. Not even close. And that is a genuine, and I think he's right, I think he's on the money, that is a genuine class action. And I've said, if anyone's got a class action for that device, I'm in on it, because they should have shipped that 29 watt charger with it. It is a disgrace in comparison to the 29-watt charger, the thing that they actually pushed with it. And I think they've done that a couple of times now, and I think they've got to be really careful, because Apple's big and Apple's powerful and all that kind of stuff, but they can't tweak the tail of the bear too often without it coming around and giving it a bit of a snap. And this is one of those things.
They've never been afraid of a consumer or a customer backlash over a decision to kill a port or kill a feature or, I mean, historically, wow. I mean, we can go back through the list and we can start with the floppy and we can start with USB and we go to USB and we can go to Thunderbolt and FireWire. And I mean, so
they're very aware that there are things they can do to get their users steamed. There are very few things they can do to get their users so steamed that they would stop using a Mac or even stop using an iPhone. I think they would be a very different company if they were, if people had an alternative to buying an iOS-based phone or tablet directly from Apple, or if they had, they could buy a macOS device from another supplier. I think you would find Apple getting a lot more conservative and not making fun of companies making computers that are $600.
But do you not think there's a certain point where you piss off, I mean, you piss off the pro community with the way that you change some of the pro apps, and you piss off the consumer, they're starting to just, there's a certain point where there has to be a critical mass of tweaks that you do that piss off your general customer base.
How many times have you been angry, Ewan, and what's on your desk?
Yeah, all right, shut up.
Right. Good call. Well, the funny thing about the pro community is here's two parts of the pro community, and this is going to sound super mean, so I will accept all the hate mail you want to send, docrock@gmail.com. I pretty much don't give a perfect nuke. Two types of pro community. The type that something new comes out, and they go, you know what? I want to test this because if there's any stitch that changing this might make me a little bit more efficient, might make me a little bit more money, I'll dive right at it. Something like Andy Anako's partner on his other podcast. This dude buys everything as soon as it comes out, Alex, right? We have there's a joke about how much Alex's kit costs, because anything new comes out, he don't care. He just buys it. If it works, it works. If it don't, he'll tell you about it on the show. Then there's the other pro community who most of us are professionals, but then we're kind of struggling and, you know, we're covering bills, but we're not super, super rich. So when stuff comes out that causes us to spend money, then we got to kind of fight tooth and nail to, you know, kind of hold our grip the way it is. And it's hard as a manufacturer to like cover both ends, you know. So when if they came out with a new machine right now that solved all the woes, but marked it at 10,000, many people would blink. I, for one, would be like, if I could spend that 10 and it's going to make me 100, who cares? I'm buying it. You know, even if I got to lease it, if I got to borrow the money from, you know, the college funds for the kids I don't have, whatever. But, you know what I'm saying? So there's a weird catch 22 with that. And I always thought people like, oh, they're dumbing down OS 10. They're taking all of this away, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Who loves that the most? People like me, because I can dig around in terminal. And then so that what they did was take out the guys who called themselves pros, but kind of sort of wasn't, because the real pros know how to dig in terminal. And I said the same thing about Photoshop. When Photoshop went to subscription, all of the quote unquote pros got mad. I'm like, the real pros will pay for it because we know we're going to bill it to our customers because we have said clients, so we don't care. And now Adobe's the best they've ever been. So it's a weird play, honestly.
Well, you know, I mean, what it is? I do know a lot of pro users.
When Apple does something to screw up somebody else's workflow, suck it up, it's progress. If Apple does something that screws up my workflow, then the company is doomed and they don't care. And in the meantime, Apple's still going to do what they think. They're going to skate to where they think the puck is going. And Adam mentioned all the things that they got rid of that meant it was the end of the world. And you know, everybody else followed suit after a while. I think with the MacBook stuff, Apple is a lot more willing to experiment with first the MacBook Air and what they took out of that, and then with the regular MacBook and the USB C stuff. I think with the Pro models, they're a little bit slower. They're going to test the waters and see how that stuff is received. They'll be a little bit more conservative and keep the Thunderbolt port, hopefully. But you know, they're going to keep doing what they think is right and not chase the segments, you know, the niche markets that are out there still depending on them, because like Andy said, they're still going to buy Macs. There's a difference between being really pissed off and saying I'm not going to buy Apple anymore.
I'm going to go to Andy
because
he had a point, but the one thing I will just immediately come back there, Chuck, is that Apple's always been about choices. Apple's always been about there are three different ways to complete the same job, and by limitation of ports, sometimes they take those choices away, which is against that ethos originally.
Yeah, I think Apple's always been about the choices that they choose, not so much our choices.
No, I mean, if you look at completion of tasks, particularly in applications, if you...
You're talking about software.
Yeah, and, yeah. You know, you go
command
back to,
line versus shortcuts versus icon-driven things.
They've always been about giving choices to consumers. And I think that's true in hardware as well, to a certain degree, in the computers that they produce. But anyway, Andy, go back to your point that you were just about to make there.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I know a lot of video producers who the delays in Apple updating the Mac Pro and also the Mac Pro they actually shipped got them to finally switch from Mac to Windows, because a lot of their apps they're using for video editing and production were cross-platform anyway. There is a very, very deep community of people who just build their own Windows machines to suit their own needs, so they know that they're never going to be stuck in hardware limbo, and they just kind of had enough of it. The benefit of having a Macintosh in their office was not as good as the benefits of being able to have whatever hardware they want inside their office, and it got them to go. I had the same thing myself where I switched from an iPhone to an Android device a couple of years ago because it just simply was no longer suiting my needs. The closed nature of the iPhone was giving me too many limitations, and I just it wasn't me waving a flag of revolution and saying I've finally had it with you people. It's like, no, every time you buy a new piece of hardware, no matter what it is, it needs to either answer the question, what problem is this going to solve for me, or what new opportunity is this going to create for me? And Apple products are exactly the same way. So it's going to be very, very difficult for Apple to make a move that's so radical that it will force people to leave a Macintosh and go into the Windows community. The risk that they take is that every time they do one of these kind of radical moves, again, you got $1,000 in your pocket, and that's how much you've got budgeted for, let's say $1,200 budgeted for your next notebook. And you go into the Apple store and you see that, okay, I can get sort of the entry level this, and because they made it so slim and light, I'm going to have to buy another $100 or $150 worth of adapters to make it work. And then they go they have this too much money to spend on like after one visit. So they go, hey, what the heck? After we get ourselves an ice cream cone, let's go to the Microsoft store. And they say, wow, for $1,300, I can buy actually at least a mid-range machine. And it's a convertible. And Windows 10, actually, I haven't looked at Windows in 3 or 4 years. It's actually kind of interesting and kind of easy to use right now. And maybe that's what gets people to say, perhaps the next $1,300 goes to Windows instead of to a new Mac. It's a risk that Apple's certainly willing to take. I don't think they do these things arrogantly. I think that what they do is they are in the wonderful position of being able to build exactly the hardware that they want to make. And they're hoping that people will come along with them on this journey, but they will not make a $600 Macintosh unless it's everything that they want a Macintosh to be. So that's where you are.
And they're not going to make a machine with a VGA port on it either.
Yeah, that's not it, I don't think, but I think that's been a bit...
But that's a classic example of the sort of stuff that I don't like to see in the Mac community. Sony used to make, of course, like a bunch of different notebooks, not just one. They make a whole bunch. They want to cover everybody's needs. And so they made one that was slim, and they'd figured out a way to shoehorn a VGA port into it by sort of cantering it up at a little bit of an angle. And a bunch of different Mac blogs were making fun of, oh, see, Apple would never do this. Look, this is ugly. This is pathetic. And meanwhile, there are a lot of people whose job, they spend most of their week on an airplane giving presentations, traveling for their company, and they're looking at like, that is brilliant. Every single hotel conference room, every single meeting room I go to, every place has a VGA connector waiting for me to know that I don't have to carry anything else. That doesn't look stupid to them. It looks functional. And that's the reason why a lot of them would want to buy a machine that has VGA built in.
I have been turning up to conference rooms to show material that I've shot for firms for 20 years. And I have never, and I'm talking never, I'm not talking like on the one occasion, I'm talking never, turned up to a conference room to show something and I've been presented with anything other than a VGA connection.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. You want to ever.
You want a hysterically funny example of this? I decided to take the risk. I had the brand new MacBook Nothing. I was giving a talk like about 4 days after it was finally shipped, and I decided, you know what, I'm gonna commit to using this as my travel computer because this is the perfect example of perfect use case for a test case. And I brought a whole box of things to make sure that no matter what happened, I would be able to use to plug this into whatever was waiting for me. And because all it had was USB-C. And there weren't cables shipping at that time, I traveled with and used I traveled with a mobile Wi-Fi hotspot. I traveled with an Apple TV. I traveled with an adapter that would let me get VGA out of the Apple TV. And I wound up essentially having to screen share from this mobile device into the Apple TV, and then from there get VGA out to the display. I've got a picture of the lectern where it's just nothing but boxes and cables and this tiny super compact Macintosh out there. Right. So I know that it's rarely that extreme for most people, but there are people for whom if you tell them, if you buy this, you board the plane with one gadget and no charger and it'll work. That'll get $1,300 out of that person.
Yeah. Also, I made this walk mistake in the 90s. I mean, this is a funny because it's not necessarily a new problem when you go ultra portable either. I mean, I bought a PowerBook Duo 2300C thinking this is going to be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and ended up having to have a million cables and a million adapters. It didn't have a CD drive, so you had an external CD. You had this docking thing. It's the classic dilemma, right?
Yeah, I've got a drawer full of DisplayPort to VGA connectors because, you know, I would forget them and have to buy them every place that I was going to make a presentation. So now I basically keep one everywhere I go.
God, I agree with you there. The funny thing is you would keep forgetting them and keep buying them and keep forgetting them and keep buying them. And then I'm like, oh, I got stolen. Man, I'll go buy another one. Then I find it in the car. So I probably have like 20 of those damn things, almost as much as half a notebook costs.
I feel like a squirrel, putting them away in all different places so I can find them when I need them.
I wish I had. Oh, wait, here it is. I have. I wound up finally getting so annoyed at myself at like leaving the house with the wrong adapters that I went on eBay and I bought like four or five of these little like leatherette like coin purses and created a kit for every one of my bags and even for the side pocket of my tactical pants that has like every single like tiny little stubby adapter possible for making sure that you can get power and data to every single device that I have. Because the number of times I've been caught, I didn't have the USB-C, but I did have the micro USB, but I didn't have the micro USB, but I had a lightning adapter, and like, ugh. At some point you have to just solve the problem and be done with it.
You liar, you just like carrying a purse.
it's European satchel.
We've talked enough, mate.
Women like men who are confident. All right.
Absolutely. You know that. Definitely.
There you go.
We've had some reviews. Thank you very much for those people that bothered to leave us a review. We've had a couple for Kyle, who does the Daily News Show. If you've not listened to it, you really bloody should. BritishNetwork.com/news. And Kyle Swagger in the Philippines every day gathers all the news together, all the big tech news that's taken place, and sticks it in a 5-minute podcast. Just that little brief. Kind of, you know, on the way to work, you can listen to it, you know exactly what's been going on, what the things are you should look when you get to work. And we've had a couple of reviews. First one, I used to watch the Tech News Today show, but I quickly didn't realize I didn't have the time for that. I went on to other podcasts and found that they were too long and not relevant. But BTN News is short, to the point, and it has the news that I find really relevant. So it's well worth the listen. Thank you very much to John for that. And Andy has said, I love this show. Kyle always is on form. Every single day, regardless. If you can only listen to one podcast a day, it should be this one. That's the new show with Kyle Swagger. He's absolutely awesome. He does it every single day for us from the Philippines, and he's just at that right point in terms of time, because it's like he uploads the show, and generally, if you've got it for sort of like the 8:30 walk to work, it's going to be ready for you. And we've had some other songs. Jordan's put down from the Mac podcast. After being a faithful listener to other podcasts, I've become annoyed with one-sided views, so I discovered the Mac Show, and thank God, a balanced argument. He's not listening. Sometimes it's easier for everyone remains friends. I like the way we get to the view about how Apple products affects the UK instead of just the US viewpoint of view. And the swearing also helps me to stay focused. I don't know how, but fair enough. Definitely worth the listen. Keep up the good work. And Andy's also put truly informative, insightful analysis of the latest Apple news. The team discuss the hot topics, even obscure news items, ensuring a good range of options are given to the balanced view. Another gem in the podcast library. Thank you very much for both of you for leaving us a review. Do appreciate it. If you'd like to leave us a review in iTunes, then please do subscribe to us through iTunes, because it'll boost us up in the charts and increases our exposure. And regularly do your unsubscribe and then wait a weekend and then resubscribe, and that'll boost us up back through the charts as well if you could. Thanks very much. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2. Every week we say it. These guys have been with us for 8 years. They've supported us. They've given us unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage. There are 3 terabytes of shows that go out, and they're all being sampled by the NQL channel, the Not Quite Live channel. So if you click on live when we're not actually live, what you'll end up with is a show from the past. And if you subscribe to us on Twitter at British Tech, then you'll get a notification when the show's changed, and you'll be able to go and view it. And we've got some absolute classics up there, some right back from the Bagel Tech days, which Andy Inatko launched for us years and years and years ago. Check out UK2. Please support them as well. And whatever you're doing right this second, stop what it is and just tweet out, thanks to at UK2 for supporting at British Tech, because we really would be lost without them. They're absolutely awesome. And the other people that we've got are Hoya. And I went to see Hoya this week. On Monday, there was an exhibition at the NEC over the weekend and on to Monday. And they showed me the new top-loader glasses that we launched 2 weeks ago. And we got the exclusive view on these things. And they are beautiful. They are really light. I couldn't get over how nice they were. They also showed me their virtual reality system, and I was kind of like, and I've got to admit, whenever someone says anything about virtual reality, I always kind of go, yeah, fair enough, great. And they said, oh, we've got a virtual reality system, give it a go. And I put these glasses on, and it's run off an iPhone 6, and it's kind of like a Google Glass model, but they've got, as is typical with Hoya, that all the optics have been manufactured by them, and they can actually dial in your prescription on the lenses that are in the VR system. And then what they do is they show you some sample reading or something like that with the glasses that you're going to choose, or with the lenses that you're going to choose. And you can see whether it's in focus or out of focus. And then they can get you to look in a virtual room, and you can look around the room. And if you, the classic problem that you've got with progressive lenses is the fact that, you know, you've got this large band at the top that's in focus at the distance range, but then as you get down further through the length of it, you can see that it actually starts to get a bit blurred at the edges. And you can actually see what your glasses are going to look like with your prescription in the VR system. And it artificially blurs as it would look, and it can show you different types of lenses. So that's one of the poorer quality lenses that they've got, and that's one of the higher quality lenses that they've got. And they can tell you where the blurring and distortion is going to occur from the lens that you choose, whether you buy from them or whether you buy from someone else. And it's all based on your prescription. And actually, I walked away, and I'm really cynical about VR, as you know from the last few weeks in the podcast. I was absolutely blown away. It was absolutely brilliant. And I found myself wanting to go over and look at the bottle of wine and see what the label was and stuff like that. Totally immersive. It was really, really good. So if you want to know more about the Hoya glasses, and Alex has come over here and he said, yeah, but it's Hoya and it's UK and I don't know. Just send an email. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. Send an email to podcast@hoya.co.uk. And Mark will get you sorted. He'll get the local person to get in contact with you from Hoya. I mean, these are the people, you know, I say the average person touches 7 Hoya products a day and doesn't even know they're touching it. So, you know, they're a big firm. They will get you connected to the people that will help you. So thanks to Hoya for their support, because they're great as well. Superb. It's time for the cool thing. Start us off, Duck.
Okay. I got a good one. So... I've been a long-time user of Text Expander, and they just changed their model a little bit. It freaked a whole bunch of people out, but I kind of like it because it's a lot faster, it's a lot cooler, and it's a lot easier to get in and do some of the complicated stuff that I've, you know, always wanted to do, but I was like, I don't really have time to sit down and mess with it. Now they've changed a lot of the snippet creation, if you want to do a high-end snippet, to like a drag-and-drop method, and you can do it all online. kind of test it out, and it just ends when you put it in your snippet folder, it ends up working on all of your devices. If you're unfamiliar with Text Expander, what it allows you to do is take repetitive text, things that you put in all the time, like disclaimer at the end of the show, or my 5100 hashtags I put in when I make an Instagram post or whatever, and you can have those generate just by typing a shortcut. So for instance, if I'm posting something about the laser engraving business, I have something which is basically X etched hash, and it generates all those hashtags, and I don't have to keep typing them. And, you know, average every 6 months or so, I probably save about 8 hours worth of typing, because it knows your typing speed versus how slow you are versus what it spits out. But anyway, if you haven't played with it yet, you should check it out. If you have used it before, the lifetime upgrade for people who are already Text Expander users is 50% off, so it makes it like $20 instead of $40. But it is super, super awesome now. And it was already awesome, but it's even better. And you just got to wrap your head around subscription model versus, you know, buying it outright. But it's pretty, pretty awesome.
Text Expander is used to invite all the guests to this show.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hence the same email every week.
Yeah. Andy, what have you got for us, sir?
Something really, really fun. If you're into photography, or even if you're not terribly into photography, you just don't like your pictures look like crap. This is a light called the Loom Cube. It is a tiny, like, inch and a half square cube of, like, machined aluminum. So it's really, really durable. And I don't think it'll work because I've been using this so much. It is a steady LED light. Yeah, oh, there it is. It's a steady LED light that you can use to, with 10 levels of intensity, that you can use to basically as fill in as when you're shooting video or taking photos. And it's amazing. You can either just hold it or put it on a little mini tripod to just light up whatever you got. Or it actually has its own Bluetooth enabled app, so that you can actually just have it like mounted next to your phone, and it will just actually fire synchronized to the shutter button, and will actually just work like as a flash. You can also get some accessories here. Like here is, the Loom Cube little stand here, so you can actually have it. There you go.
It does a GoPro mount as well, doesn't it? So you can use it.
Yeah, like exactly. So basically, if you're like at a party, you can actually just like have your phone set up like this, and even in the dark, even in a darkened bar, you can take brilliant photos with it. And it's not as though it just like pops off the flash when it takes the picture using that Bluetooth app. It will actually do it does that thing where you click the shutter button in the app, and you'll see the light go up and then down as it looks at the video and say, okay, I guess that's the perfect exposure. And then it'll take the picture using whatever setting that it figured out was going to be the best thing. It's really like the kind of pictures you can take with this compared with the kind of pictures that you can take with the built-in flash of whatever you got is like night and day. It's not cheap. It's like $80, but it's also waterproof. You can also control it via infrared, so you can have it fire whenever it sees the flash of your phone. So you can use it like as a sort of a side light. So you have like sort of a two lighting setup. I actually use it for other things too. Like if I have a car that's supposed to be picking me up, and it's like late at night and it doesn't see it. I can see a car that looks like it's a little bit confused. You can also, of course, fire it manually. So I'll just have this in my pocket and I'll just go like this. It just has a signaler, and then, okay, I'll see this car suddenly like accelerate and go to pick me up. It's so small that, and so durable. It's also, by the way, waterproof. So you don't have to worry about it in the rain. So small and durable that it's just like it's always in my pocket if I plan on doing anything. I've got the reason why it keeps flashing off is because I have it in that mode where it says anytime you see like a flash go off, please synchronize flash. And because I've got nothing but like huge LED lights here, it keeps thinking that I've got a flash here. But you can turn that feature off. So it's so good that usually I have the advantage as a reviewer to, gosh, that looks really interesting. I think I'll have them like lend me one for a month, and then if I like it, I'll buy it. This one, it was like, no, I think I'll buy it, and then if I like it, I'll have them send me a second one, because you can also have it synchronize as up to four of these at the same time. So you can really have like this studio lighting setup pretty much that you're traveling with in your pocket.
The thing here that's really cool for me is I carry LED lights around with me to use on site all the time, and they're big. And
this is what I used to travel with, because it's such a useful thing to have with you.
And it carries a Sony battery with it as well for a camcorder, which is, you know, 24,000 milliamp hours or something stupid. But the thing that's nice about these is they're small, so you can hold them away from the camera. So the person that's looking at the camera isn't going to be squinting because of what's pointing directly at them is where they're also looking. But what's the battery life on these?
Really, really good. So good that I don't really worry about charging it as soon as I get home. If I'm having a really big tourist day with it, it'll easily last all day and then some. I find myself charging it about once a week, once every couple of weeks. If I were shooting video with it, where I had it just, I'm having it on all the time, I'm guessing about an hour or two of steady light, but most of the time you're just sort of turning it on for a few seconds, then turning it off, or just giving it a pop of flash and that's it. And so it really does last a good long time. And it does recharge off of just micro USB, so you can just recharge it off of whatever phone charger you've got inside your box, inside your bag, including if you've got just a mobile USB battery pack.
Yeah, that's good. Right. That's good.
Do you happen to know, Andy, could you use it while you had the battery connected? Because I'd imagine that'd be a way, if you can, to extend the usage, you know, carry one of these big, you know, 16,000 milliamp hour batteries. I mean, it takes away a little bit from the portability, but...
It will run off one of these batteries. I can't imagine a usage where you'd want to have it running for several hours. It doesn't get hot, to my experience, but then again, I haven't been running it for like a half hour at a time. But in a pinch, you could run it off of directly off of an external battery. But again, it's not the sort of thing where you'd have to do that. The longest I've used it for has been when I'm doing like a podcast or a video podcast where I'm in a hotel, or I even have to be like outside somewhere. And the one thing you can't solve for is getting good lighting, but you can actually just have some fill up here. So I've only had that running for about 30 minutes or so.
Yeah,
seemed to work okay.
I'm looking at the quad pack here, and forget the price because it's $300. But the quad pack is I'm sitting thinking, there's 4 hours of battery light there, and normally for me to carry 4 hours of battery light, it's probably four times or eight times the weight value that these four things would be. They'd actually fit in the slots of the batteries that I carry for the lights. You know.
Yeah.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I just want you can finish up. I want to jump in after and talk about the guys behind this company.
Oh, okay. All I was going to say is that what makes it a big win for me is that I'm nutty enough about photography that if I'm going for several days, if I'm going to be on a really long trip, I will have this with me. If I'm going for a long photo walk, I will then have this with me. In the old case, but obviously something this big, I'm not going to take it with me unless I really have a reason to. I think I'm really going to have a reason to do so. With this one, though, it can just be part of your regular daily carry. Double so if you always have your laptop bag with you. It just takes up no space, and so you will just suddenly be taking a picture with your camera phone, wishing that, oh gosh, that could be a really great picture. It's too bad that I don't have like my real camera with me. But then you remember that, oh wait, I do have my light here, so I can actually fill in some of that shadow. Or if you're taking a picture of people, the giveaway that you're using a camera phone is usually, of course, dead on light, like deer in the headlight sort of lighting. Whereas if you have something a little bit more subtle that's off to the side, people just wonder why the lighting is so good, why you got such a good picture, even though you just took it with a mediocre range camera phone. So, yeah,
good stuff. Excellent.
So, Pete, I was just going to comment. The guys that founded this company are actually a couple of my former coworkers from Nick Software. And they've been working on this for years, Mornay and Matt, and they're really good guys, and they've worked really hard on this company, and they've worked really hard to make sure that this was a quality product. I know the years and time they've spent in putting into this, because I've been in communication with them, you know, on and off just a little bit as they were kind of building it out. And so, you know, I think it's well, you can see that, you know, they've done a good job, and they really tried to make this thing work. And they come from a photography background. I mean, they've had years of experience in the photo and video world. And this was built for them to solve problems that they had. So, and that always tends to be, I think, where you get the best kind of products.
And if you can get them, send me four, Adam. That'd be great.
I can ping Matt and see.
Cheers, man.
I'll point them to this review. I'm sure they appreciate the exposure as well.
Yeah. Lee, what have you got for us, mate? I cancelled your update thing. I'm sorry, mate. That's...
My picture's gone quite bad. Hang on, let me just sort my video out. This out. It's my Ethernet's a bit.
Don't worry, it's fine.
Funny. Hang on, I'm okay. So I've got two actually. I've got a really quick one. I'm using the iPad Pro all the time, as you know, if you follow me on Twitter, and I've been using the Pencil quite a lot. So what I did was see these Fisher Space clips.
All right.
So I'll put a chat. Let me just put the link in. Sorry, just bear with me. Got it there, copied, ready to go. So I'm just putting that in the chat room now. So they're really cheap. I think it's about £6. The only thing I had to do with it was just close the loop a little bit with the pliers, just so it fitted on the on it nice and tight. But yeah, what I tend to do is just put it on the case. So that's the smart keyboard cover, and then I'm just clipping it on there. And if you use the smart cover without the keyboard, which I use quite a lot as well, you can actually fold it up into the upright position for the iPad, and the pen stays exactly where it is. So that's just a really quick one. My main pick is something kind of photography. Well, it is photography based as well. This is my camera a choice. This is a Canon 70D. But this is my pick. It's the Rode VideoMic Pro. I don't know if any of you guys have got experience with those. I'm just going to put it into the chat room. I'm trying to get more back into YouTube after many years being absent from it. And I was looking for something that I could take video directly from my DSLR for both podcasting. So even just talking about the guitar show, one thing I'm going to be doing is I'm using iPad Pro more and more these days. So I'm capturing video straight off this using the mic, which is the best mic I've ever used, to be honest. They're really good. And I'm just using the camera connection kit, and I'm putting the video straight into iMovie on iOS, and I'm just editing it, and I'm really pleased with the results on it. And they've just taken another £60 off these mics on Amazon.
Those mics are excellent. The only thing
absolutely love it.
If you plug them into your camera, you get a lot of hiss, and the problem, everyone thinks that the hiss is because of the microphone, and it's not. The hiss is because of the audio system on your camera. Every time, get yourself a Zoom H4 to go with that mic, and you will never be underwhelmed.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with that.
£25 for a dead cat. That also helps it, because it can get windy, but that mic is amazing.
It is. I mean, everyone thinks when they plug a camera or they plug a mic into a camera, they get a load of hiss and they think it's the mic that's the problem. It never is. It's always the camera system. I can't remember what the thing is. Is it AGR? AGX?
Yeah, it's automatic gain compensation. Yeah, I think it's AGC.
AGC,
but that's what causes
that's what causes the hiss. Yeah, it's on every camera you've got. So record externally with your audio, even if it's on your iPhone, mate, with that, and you'll never ever be unimpressed. But don't record Don't record with your camera, because you'll be pissed off all the time.
Lee, that thing plugged into an iPhone is freaking awesome. And then I don't know if they do it in iMovie yet, but in Final Cut you can sync it in like two button clicks. It's pretty wicked.
I didn't even think about plugging it into the iOS, into iOS, to be honest. I'll give that a go.
Well, don't forget as well, on your iOS, you can do an instant clapperboard.
Yes, true.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you can get a clapperboard app, you can do the snap, and then the syncing's a piece of cake. Forget your two clicks, mate.
So it sounds like I've picked something that is pretty industry known to be brilliant, I guess. I'm late to the party, I guess, on it. But
there's nothing. That's it. All the time, I hear people say to me, "Oh, I did this, but then I heard hiss," and I'm like, "Yeah, but the hiss isn't the mic; it's the camera. It's not the mic. It's never the mic."
That makes sense. Yeah, that just makes sense. I'll have more of a play around with it over the next few days. But that's why I'm planning to do my podcasting with, you know, the video stuff, to not live, obviously, you know, because the restrictions we've got on iOS at the moment with audio. But I'm really chuffed with that.
It's a good pick.
And if someone's in, want to get it, but they're looking at the 150 and it's like a little hard, the VideoMic Go, which is the baby sister, is like about, I guess, £55 if I convert to you guys. Mm-hmm. And it's basically the same thing, just smaller, not as sensitive. Really, really good for tinier cameras, like mirrorless oriented joints, probably like Andy likes to play with.
Mr. Latornis, do you have a cool thing?
I do, absolutely. What I have up here right now is not an iPad Pro. It's actually a solar-powered charger.
for your iOS devices.
I thought you were going to pick a frigging Surface there on a Mac show.
Yeah, right? Wouldn't that be something? We'd get emails about that. This is called the Solar Tab, and as you may know, I like to spend a lot of time outdoors. I do a lot of camping and hiking, and I like to take my iOS devices out there with me, not to listen to music, but to take pictures, to use as a GPS, to, you know, a bunch of very appropriate things out there in the wild that you can do with your iPhone. But you need to keep them charged. So I've experimented with a lot of different devices, a lot of solar panels, some hydrogen fuel cells, even some a cooking pot that will serve to charge your iPhone. What I wound up doing is just taking some external batteries with me, and that works to an extent, depending on how long you're out there, how many devices you need to charge, and what you're doing with them. But I got this device, and it made me reconsider solar again, because solar technology has come a long way in the last few years. This panel is made out of what's called monocrystalline solar cells instead of polycrystalline, which is sort of that fish scale look that you may remember from solar panels. It's much more efficient. It's much more efficient about converting sun into energy. But one of the nice things about this one, it is also has a 13,000 milliamp battery built into it. So you can leave your house with this fully charged, charge your devices till it drains, and then recharge it with the sun, or top it off, keep it charged with the sun. Because it has this nice cover with it, it can set up in a variety of angles so that you can always make sure that you're facing the sun directly, which is very important when you're charging. It's got two USB ports, so you can charge two devices at the same time. It's got a very nice indicator, a light, bright light that lets you know when it's charging. It has an indicator that lets you know how charged it is, and you can charge it back up with a micro USB. Like I said, it made me reconsider taking solar panels out with me in the wild again. Very well made, nice and rugged. It's slim, so just, you know, takes up pretty much exactly the same amount of space as your iPad would, from a company called Solar Tab. It's available on Amazon right now. They're having a sale. I think it's normally going to go for about $150. Through the end of April, it's $98, $100. So you can go pick it up. I'm going to put the link in the chat room right now. Sure. I'm not sure if it's available in the UK yet, but I will put the US Amazon store link in there, and then hopefully you can find it on the UK store when it becomes available.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Sure. My cool thing, very quickly, dead easy. Is Good Kill. It was a film that I downloaded, and the reason I downloaded it was I'd looked at it a couple of times and thought, I don't know if I fancy it or not, and the trailer didn't really grab me. And then it was $1.99 to buy the whole thing, including all the extras and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, yeah, stuff that, I'll buy that. And I watched it, and I thought it was really, really well done. I think it's a really powerful performance from Ethan Hawke, and I love the fact that a lot of the shots in the US of where he lives and where he works are done like they're a drone strike shot. It's really, really well done. Quite a powerful story, and I was wrapped by it. I thought it was excellent. I don't know why this didn't make it more at the cinema, because it's a well-done film. And it's only $1.99, so, you know, for the price, it's well worth the money.
iTunes?
On iTunes, yeah. It's £1.99 at the moment on iTunes for the whole thing.
I'll watch that. It's a good thing.
It's a very good film, yeah, very good. We're going to do a live unboxing on the big show of Muller's new iPad Pro. It's still in the plastic. We're not doing it right now. We're doing it on the big show.
Oh, big show.
Yeah, we'll do it on the big show, because that was my pick for the Mac show. Where can we get a hold of you, Doc?
You can find me a couple times a week here on the British Tech Network and all over the interwebs at Doc Rock.
Excellent, mate. Andy, where are you, sir?
Hit me on Twitter. You have to spell my last name, though. IHN is in Nancy, AT is in Tom, KO. Website is the same name.com, or you can check me out at the Chicago Sun-Times website, suntimes.com.
Excellent. Adam, where are you, sir?
You can find me at Mattcast, mattcast.com, and Mattcast on Twitter, and pretty much every place else.
Excellent, sir. Lee, where are you?
Obviously across BTN, but also on Twitter, LJPUK and LJPUK.com.
And last but by no means least, Chuck.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at Chuck Latornis, and then I'm splitting my time pretty evenly between Macworld, Macworld.com, and the Mac Observer. I think the review of the Solar Tab should go up on the Mac Observer pretty soon, but if you want to compare it, I know Glenn Fleischman is also reviewing it for Macworld, so you can see what we each thought of it in a little bit.
Excellent, mate. Well done. Thank you. And for those of you that are wondering about the Mac Mini Fund, we had a Mac Mini Fund. So basically, we need four new Mac Minis or five new Mac Minis for the Skype wall to make it work properly. And we've been running a fund. And within the first week, we got the first Mac Mini. So that's awesome. And we got our Blue Peter accumulator right here. Look, there we go. And we're fractionally up. We've got 75 quid this week. So thank you very much to the people that donated this week for the Mac Mini Fund. We are only 100 quid short of buying our second Mac Mini. So if you could, please, please, please donate via bageltechnews@gmail.com on PayPal. And anyone who goes over £25 as a donation, they get a specially inscribed cover that's going to go on each Mac Mini that will have your message on it and your signature that says that you were the person that donated. The first Mac Mini is already done. Doc is ready to inscribe those. And then all five will have your inscription on if you donated more than 25 quid. So thank you very, very much to those people who have. It's really cool. BTN is not for profit. We don't make any money at all from all the stuff that we do. And donations are keep us afloat. So thanks to those that donate on Patreon, and thanks to those that have donated to the Mac Mini Fund.
And Andy's frustration.
And the video has frozen, so I have no idea why, but we are not going back. There we go. No, I do know, because I clicked the wrong button. There you go. Why the moron? My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, but why the hell you'd follow me, I've got no idea. See you next week. At least we did a Mac show. Thanks for listening.